Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and political kingmaker Vito Lopez is officially out as Brooklyn Democratic Party boss, and Frank Sedio is in. Lopez, as many of you know by now, is the disgraced Brooklyn Assemblyman at the heart of a scandal that involved hushed-up payouts of taxpayer money to female staffers who accused Lopez of sexual harassment, which has not only removed him from a once very powerful perch, but also has Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver tangled up in a mess that may cost him his power as well. And while the primary election last week and the Kings County chair vote this week was maybe not on your radar, listen up as we try to explain why all of this really matters and whether the era of political kingmakers is coming to an end. Joining us is Colin Campbell, political reporter for the New York Observer. Hi, Colin.
Hi, Brian.
So Wednesday night, in the backroom wilds of Deep Brooklyn, Frank Sedio, to no one's surprise, won the Kings County Democratic Party chairmanship. Sedio is now technically the chair of the executive committee of the Brooklyn or Kings County Democratic Party. What does that person do?
That person basically endorses and puts the Democratic establishment of the borough, which is one of the largest county Democratic organizations in the country, behind candidates and works to elect and defeat certain candidates of their choosing.
Now, explain the source of Vito Lopez's power as a way of explaining what his absence will mean for local politics.
Unquestionably, Vito Lopez's source of power was this influential nonprofit network that elected officials plowed hundreds of thousands of dollars into called Ridgewood Bushwick, based in northern Brooklyn and Queens. And with that, he had a source of votes and volunteers to elect people in a wide swath of territory.
So who is Frank Sedio?
Frank Sedio is sort of an affable lawyer from southeastern Brooklyn. His base is this influential club called the Thomas Jefferson Club in southeastern Brooklyn. And it's a little bit more Republican territory. He's going to be a little bit less interested in continuing sort of the civil war that's been dominating Brooklyn Democratic politics for some time.
Civil war between whom and whom?
These people, I mean, it's hard to, you know, condense briefly, but notably these people called reformers opposed Vito Lopez's rule and wanted more transparency, and Vito Lopez was somewhat famous for holding grudges for a very, very long time.
Sedio is a lawyer and the head of the Thomas Jefferson Club in South Brooklyn, as you say. He's a longtime friend and ally of Vito Lopez. Considering how much Lopez has been discredited now, why didn't the reformers win with their opposition candidate?
Because they didn't control any votes. I mean, the reform crowd in its core has maybe three solid votes out of some, 42, I think, district leaders that select the next leader.
And I guess we should say that it's not as if Vito Lopez has tarnished an institution with a previously gleaming record of ethical virtue. Four of the last five party bosses in Brooklyn have been investigated or indicted on corruption charges and have resigned in scandal. The party machine gets accused of nepotism and patronage. It lacks inclusiveness and transparency. So what has Sedio promised in the way of reforms?
Well, he's promised to increase transparency and eliminate these quote-unquote at-large district leaders that past bosses like Vito Lopez simply appointed, which were former staff members and loyal to them. So with this, voters will have more direct impact on who controls the county organization, because now they can, their district leaders that they elect have more voice. On the other hand, you know, Frank Sedio is still very much from an old-school political machine sort of mindset. So in the sense of patronage and so on, I wouldn't expect huge changes there.
And this is a successor handpicked by Vito Lopez. So he's in this network of people who are on their side of the quote-unquote civil war. But is it that Vito Lopez himself will be calling the shots, you know, from the back room, like when Medvedev was elected in Russia, but it was really still Putin in charge?
I don't know if that's accurate. I don't know if Vito Lopez handpicked Frank Sedio. They're both friends, and they're both from the same sort of establishment crowd, but Frank Sedio had his own base of support, and people like him a lot.
Okay.
So I think he's going to be calling his own shots.
Joanne Simon was given the role of co-chair of the Rules Committee. She was vying for the chairmanship. Was this a consolation prize, the city reaching out to folks like the new King's Democrats or the many who think he'll just be Vito Lopez part two?
I mean, the Simon appointment is a great example of that. And he selected a number of people who weren't necessarily from his corner of Brooklyn to lead various county chairmanship, committee chairmanships and so on. And Simon is a great example of that.
We're getting one call coming in so far. A few people, we will have time for a few calls if other people want to chime in, either because you're just curious about all this intrigue at the heart of Brooklyn Democratic Party politics, or if you want to talk about why this actually matters to the people. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, as we talk about this unfolding political soap opera with Colin Campbell from the New York Observer, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Raul in Prospect Heights. You're on WNYC. Hi, Raul.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
There's some hopeful signs here. They did change some of the rules, which is very impressive for me as a reformer. I'm with the Prospect Heights Democrats for Reform, so we're a reform club in this corner of Brooklyn. But SETI was chosen in the same process, and really, Vito and is really part of a bigger, the machine as it's called. But it's part of the Thomas Jefferson Club. So that is the bigger thing that has to be changed. And I think for me, the top priority is getting less power in that position and having more more actual democracy in the Democratic Party in Brooklyn.
So, Raul, what, as you see it, is at stake for regular Brooklynites? Why does it matter to the people of Prospect Heights, for example,
so
if one group of Democrats or another group of Democratic power brokers is in charge of the party apparatus?
There's so much at stake here. I mean, this is, you're dealing with the governance of Brooklyn. You're dealing with, which developers get chosen, you're dealing with how we're going to fight the Republicans. For one of my big complaints about Vito Lopez is he, in his term, we have two new Republican congressmen in Brooklyn. I mean, that's shameful for the party, the head of the Brooklyn Democratic Party, mm-hmm. to really not put up an effective fight in those races. But it's all sorts of governance. It's all. You know me as an Atlantic Yards fighter. It's like this sort of backroom deals get made, bad decisions get made because the process is bad. So it affects really everything. I wish I can give you some more specifics,
right.
But it's governance.
Well, that's a good start. Raul, thank you very much. And anybody else who wants to expand on that as to why it matters, whether one group of Democratic Party power brokers or another is in charge of the Brooklyn Democratic Party, 212-433-WNYC. But to be clear, Colin Campbell from the New York Observer, this recent scandal doesn't have to do with the party operation. It has to do with alleged sexual harassment of four female staffers in his assembly office and payouts of taxpayer money regarding that alleged sexual harassment approved by the assembly speaker in Albany. So what does one have to do with the other?
Well, I mean, Vito Lopez had other problems as well. His influential nonprofit was being investigated by federal authorities, and there was a possibility that an indictment or something like that would have eventually come. I actually think Raul made a very good point. One thing, if you remember the Bob Turner versus David Weppard special election from last summer.
To replace Anthony, that was the Anthony Weiner open seat.
Vito Lopez pulled the county organization's troops out of southeastern Brooklyn, where there was a competitive election against a Republican, and put them into a special election for the state assembly that was a Democrat versus a Democrat in his own backyard, sort of thing that he cared more about than defeating Republicans.
Interesting. Talk to me about the primary race last week. The sexual harassment charges came out after the deadline for candidates to run against Vito Lopez in the primary. He had already set the slate for the primary election borough-wide, and we know that the Democratic primary is the main event. There's not much of a Republican challenge for state legislature in November. So how did Vito Lopez's slate of candidates fare in the primary? Did his scandal affect the vote in any way?
I think his candidates did better than expected. He won two of the three races he cared about, in the state Senate race, which was overlapping his own district. His ally, State Senator Martin DeLon, won 2-1 overwhelmingly. And in this district leader race that's taken on a high profile with Lincoln Ressler, his candidate that he backed is currently leading by a handful of votes, and I believe 11,000 people turned out, and so no small amount of people turned out on his behalf.
Which I think leads us to Gregory in Brooklyn. Gregory, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, how you doing? I work with a group called Bronx for Change, but one thing that we noticed, after Mike Bloomberg was elected, is that, you have these county party leaders that are in each county. You have 2,000 Republicans, 2,000 Independents, and 2,000 Democrats. And these people elect the people who go to these, countywide meetings to pick candidates, to pick who the party boss is. In Brooklyn and the Bronx, 60 to 80% of these seats are vacant. So over the past, 20 years or so, it's been a top-down instead of a bottom-up power structure. So you get this sort of corruption that flows from the top down, and you get all this nepotism and stuff. And that's something that we know. And unless people start deciding that they're going to participate in, going out to vote, none of this is going to change. You have districts where you have, for instance, with Martin DeLon. I don't know how many people came out, but there's 100-something thousand people in that district. And maybe 3,000 or 4,000 people vote. It's a joke.
Right. And DeLon is a big ally of Vito Lopez. Gregory, thank you. So to bring it back to policy for a minute, Colin, he was the chairman of the housing committee in the assembly, Vito Lopez. And because housing is such an important issue in this city, the chairman of the housing committee is a powerful person. So couple that with the party chairmanship, and you have someone who can both funnel money and favorable legislation to organizations and can muscle both citywide and local district elected officials into supporting his agenda. So it's not just about obscure judgeship, say, and who gets to appoint that as a matter of, or appoint the candidates as a matter of nepotism. This person has power when it comes to citywide races and city council races.
Right, absolutely. Mayoral candidates would be visiting Vito Lopez in advance of that election, and citywide and congressional candidates and elected officials all up and down the slate are going to care what Vito Lopez says and what he thinks they should be doing.
Bill Clinton once visited, right? Hillary Clinton, when she was running for president.
I'm sure she visited when she was running for the Senate as well.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Ed in Jamaica, Queens. You're on WNYC. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, how you doing, Brian?
All right.
Yeah, I just had a question in general. I know out here in Queens, a lot of the old party machine is starting to fall apart. The affiliations are changing with the changing demographic in the neighborhood. There are some new people on the rise, so just to the relevance of this in the next 2 to 5 years, is it really going to be that much of a difference? Because I can't speak for Brooklyn. I used to live in Brooklyn a few years back. But out here in Queens, you can see there's a change coming. Newer people are coming in. The old party affiliations and the old party bosses are starting to lose their power. The population that voted is getting older, and there's a younger population on the rise. And the familiarity bonds are shifting. So is it really that relevant, as far as city politics are concerned, especially with the changing demographic?
Colin?
Well, you can be cynical and dismiss the relevancy of a lot of things that happen in politics, especially, once you get further into the weeds. But I do think who controls the lever of such a large democratic organization does matter, and it does affect who represents you and how they represent you.
Thanks, Ed. So, and, of course, there's a party power structure in Queens that Ed is saying is starting to dissolve at the grassroots, but Joe Crowley is the party boss in Queens County. But let's be clear here. Chris Olachowski got about 6,000 votes total. Or let me back up, because you at The Observer have followed the upstart group, the New Kings Democrats, headed up by Lincoln Ressler, who you mentioned, a young Brooklynite who's trying to take the Brooklyn machine down. He lost his district leader race to Vito's guy, Chris Olachowski. Ressler is calling foul and claiming voter fraud. So what happened there? And tell us what the Hasidic community in Williamsburg has to do with it, because I gather they're integral.
They have everything to do with it. Vito Lopez, with his housing committee chairmanship, he was able to win the loyalty of the larger Satmar group in Jewish Williamsburg. And in Hasidic Williamsburg, in Jewish Williamsburg, people turn out to vote like there's no other. I visited the polling place on Election Day. There's hundreds and hundreds of people there. More people turned out for his, this district leader race, which is for an unpaid county position, than turned out in a number of state Senate races. So it's this huge turnout. And the larger Hasidic sect is allied with Vito Lopez, as I said, and his candidate narrowly edged out Lincoln Ressler. There's some votes still left to be counted and some doubt as to who ultimately won. But it showed that, this community can sort of deliver who they say they're going to deliver votes for come hell or high water. And Lincoln Ressler won something like 85% of the vote outside of Hasidic Williamsburg, which is a huge amount, but it turned out not to be enough.
Wow.
And Vito Lopez carries grudges, like I said.
And I don't know if there are national implications to these charges of voter identity fraud in the Hasidic community, but this is exactly what the Republican Party nationally is running around saying they need voter ID for, and the Democrats say this doesn't happen.
I mean, sure. I mean, and once you have a flood of Yiddish-speaking voters hitting the Board of Elections on a normally low turnout day, you can imagine that a lot of chaos occurs in the voting booths.
So Chris Olachowski got about 6,000 votes total. If the Hasidic community is still loyal to Vito Lopez, that still represents a big source of power, as they tend to vote as a block, as you say, and make up a couple of thousand votes. Lots of local elections, like for council seats, I'm thinking of Councilman Stephen Levin, who was Vito's former chief of staff, hinged on the Hasidic vote. So final question, does Vito still have sway in local Brooklyn politics?
I mean, some of these groups that he used to have sway over, like the Hasidic community, are going to be switching their loyalties to new power structures. I expect them to still remain loyal to Steve Levin, but with Frank Seto's election, I think you're going to see a lot more decentralization of power.
But weren't they loyal because, as Housing Committee Chairman of the Assembly, Lopez was able to bring home a lot of housing money for a lot of low-income Hasidics, and Seto doesn't have those connections?
That's correct. But on the other hand, the community tends to stay with the people that are loyal to them. So for at least the short term, they're going to continue delivering votes for, who they've been allied with in the past. But going forward, there's going to be a lot of interest in the community and who they'll be next aligning with.
All right. Political intrigue, policy ramifications. We thank Colin Campbell from the New York Observer for filling us in on the latest in the Brooklyn Democratic Party chair intrigue. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, why we may be blowing it on security. An NYU professor takes down everything from the smelly airport shoe inspection to see something, say something in the subways. He'll have a lot to say about what he sees here. Stay with us.